Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guests are Ron Andrico and Donna Stewart of the Renaissance music and poetry duo Mean Yarda. They are one of the few lute song duos in the U.S. and have produced 9 critically acclaimed CDs. Ron Andrico is a lutenist who has been a professional performer of historical music for over 30 years. He has also done extensive research and written many scholarly articles about ancient music. He served as director of the Lute Society of America from 2000 to 2002. And Donna Stewart is a mezzo-soprano who has been singing ever since she can remember. She has performed widely, including with the renowned Cleveland Baroque Orchestra, and has made appearances throughout the U.S., Canada, and at England's Canterbury Cathedral. And welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, I want to start with your beginnings. Let's start with you, Donna. You were first introduced to music as a child. Did you come from a musical family?
I came from a musical family, but not instrumentalists particularly. My father sang all the time. My mother sang all the time. I sang apparently from the time I could speak. And I started singing in, you know, the children's choir at church and whenever I had the opportunity. So I was a chorister almost all my life.
You never got the bug like some people of your generation to go into pop music, huh?
Never. In fact, I remember the very first time Ron and I recorded at a magnificent studio in Portland, Oregon, state-of-the-art kind of place. I was sitting there with fabulous equipment everywhere and all these great microphones, thinking, I'm the only person in America who has never fantasized about doing this. This is not really my plan.
I can understand that. I really can. Ron, tell us about your beginnings. I know you started out playing the banjo, of all things.
Yes, I did. I started off on banjo circa 1972 or so, and self-taught, and just enjoyed the idea of making my own music, and that's one thing that has sort of motivated me ever since, is making my own music, and through teaching, helping other people to make their own music as well. But I started off on banjo and soon gravitated to other instruments and wound up teaching myself how to play violin and faked my way into music school at some point.
And I understand once you picked up the lute, you never wanted to go back to modern music again. What was it about it?
That's true. There's just something about the sound of the lute that's really kind of an enveloping sound that's rich in overtones. And the instrument itself is wonderful to look at, too. I mean, a lot of people kind of get caught up in just the appearance of it. And it's very symbolic in a lot of ways, both the shape of the instrument, the sound of the instrument, the sound of the strings. And what really appealed to me is the aesthetic of the music and the idea of playing polyphony, or one person playing more than one part of music. It's something that is rarely done today. In fact, a lot of stuff is overdubbed instead of actually one person playing more than one part. And that's something that sort of appealed to me for whatever reason.
You know what I was wondering, too? Have you guys gotten caught up in the whole Renaissance lifestyle stuff, too? I mean, have you dug into some of that?
Not the Renaissance fair sort of lifestyle. We don't perform in costume. We don't. We sit on the stage and do what we do and let the music speak for itself, pretty much. But we are completely immersed in the history of this music, and we read continually. You can't really do justice to this music without understanding the context and understanding the historical and the political and every other sort of context for this music. And so we're definitely steeped in the time, but maybe not the way you might think.
What about you, Ron?
Well, absolutely, we're informed about the context of the music when it was new, and that's an important aspect of it. But when it comes down to it, it's really kind of a classist thing, because the music was really not the kind of music that a peasant would whistle down the street or a farmer would whistle while they were plowing the field. This is really the music of the elite classes. It's sort of a point of friction for me, because I'm very very much a working class person and very much identify with that idea. But music, of course, bridges many gaps, and in a class system like this, it bridges, certainly. And in its time, the music that we play actually enabled people who were sort of normal working artisans to actually better themselves, because they played for nobility and for royalty.
Children would have been chosen from the choirs in the large cathedrals for their talent and been given more more training as a result of that, and that was really your only path to upward mobility. Basketball teams.
Did you start out in opera?
Certainly not.
Not at all, huh?
No, I've never had that sort of a mindset, I suppose. I started out and stayed in choirs. I sang in choirs in school. I sang in church choirs. I sang in every kind of choir I could get my hands on, although not an opera chorus.
And there's something so beautiful about choir music. I've always been incredibly attracted to it as
Ron
well.
Ron and I actually met in a choir, in a small choir, and when he asked me if I had ever done lute song or if I had ever thought about singing this kind of music, I said, no, absolutely not. I don't like to sing solos. I like polyphony. I like to sing with a choir. When we finally got together and tried it out, which was quite a while ago.
Over 30 years ago, I take it.
I suddenly realized that this is polyphony. It's exactly what I've been doing, and it just felt amazingly comfortable. I couldn't believe it. Mm. So although I had to shift from singing an alto line, singing a different part, it felt remarkably comfortable right from the beginning.
And so when you guys met, I understand you met in Cleveland many years ago, as we just said. Did you decide then and there that you were going to form something together like Miniarda?
I don't think it was exactly a decision.
He just picked up the lute and you started singing and there you went?
Well, to add my two cents, I guess actually it was contrived by a mutual friend. the director of the choir that we sang in actually set up an opportunity for us to get together and try out some songs. That was actually 10 years ago this past week.
Yes, it was this week.
And after that, we realized that the balance was perfect without even trying, and that Donna certainly understood the music. I was kind of off singers at that point because I'm not really one to tolerate the diva personality, and you encounter that so much, even in the world of early music, which is the poor stepson of classical music anyway. The idea that we actually could create this music together was really a practical thing. I had a concert scheduled. The person who was going to perform that concert with me was traveling down from Ottawa, and she was unable to do it. I asked Donna if she would fill in, and we just sort of like worked up a bunch of music in a short period of time, and it worked so well, we just kept at it.
It was kind of before I had a chance to think about it, there I was, and it just... I couldn't believe how comfortable it felt.
Oh, it does. It feels like you guys fit totally, and you have the same philosophy probably about the music.
Yes.
Now, I want to have you sing that. This is a very beautiful piece. I absolutely love this. It's called Mignon Elon. I think I said that right, somewhat. Tell us a little bit about the song.
Well, actually, the song was published as a single melody line in a book that was printed in 1576, I think. This is all that was there.
It's
a single melody line. There's nothing else published. There's nothing to it at all.
Because it was a single melody line, people who have interpreted this music for many years have decided, well, it must be sung in a haunting sort of a cappella way, or with a drone accompaniment, or with a unison accompaniment or something. And I thought, well, they're just not thinking along the same lines as a professional musician would think. In fact, a book of songs like that was the equivalent of a fake book today. Mm. And you would be obliged to figure out how to harmonize that, drawing on your experience of, you know, how to find the harmonies that go along with that particular melody. It so happens that this particular song fits very well with a dance piece, a passamezzo, from the same period, and actually the composer of this passamezzo arrangement actually set a bunch of the poetry of Ronsard, the same poet, and so we decided it was actually perfectly justifiable historically, and it works quite well.
The fun part of this story really has to be told. After we left Cleveland, we were caretaking a log cabin out west in the wilderness, and we were living off the grid, and we were sitting in the dark, and there was no light available, and we were just noodling, and I was singing this tune, and Ron suddenly started improvising on this passamezzo tune, and that's where it came from.
Well, let's listen to it. Gorgeous song, magnificent. Now, you know what I want to talk about? The Renaissance period is considered, what, from 1400 till the early 1600s, approximately?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, when you started looking into this music, where do you go for research for this kind of thing?
Well, fortunately, a lot of research has been done by some wonderful musicologists and music historians. It was a thing. There was really quite a revival of the music in the late 19th century. People were realizing that the cloying, sort of heavy, romantic music that people were listening to in the 19th century was a little much, and they were more interested in the subtlety of the earlier music. We had people like Arnold Dolmetsch, who was really one of the first revivalists of the lute. He had musical lineage that went back to the early 19th century, and one of his teachers was actually an 18th century person. So it's sort of like an unbroken link in that respect. Mm. But we find our music in libraries, and that has sort of been something that has opened up quite a bit with the internet. You know,
in many ways, the 21st century is just the best time to be doing this music because we have access to so much more than our predecessors.
So you have access to databases in Europe and England and all over the place.
A lot of museums and libraries are digitizing their manuscript collections, so it enables us to actually have access to pretty rare music.
It's a big blessing.
God, that must be such an exciting discovery
really
sometimes.
Great, yeah.
Wow. Now, you know, a lot of people probably think of Renaissance music as just sacred, but it isn't all just sacred music. Isn't that correct? I mean, some of it was
actually,
the people, wasn't it?
The piece we just did was a song of seduction. It was a popular poem by Ronsard, and it was quite secular. People tend to know the body tunes that are popular, Renaissance fair type things.
Oh, yeah.
obviously, people were people, you know, and they had the same range of interests that we do now, although life was a bit more integrated at the time, and so there was a little bit less of a division. We don't necessarily feel that our concerts need to be all sacred or all secular. We mix it up a bit, which can be puzzling to a 21st century audience.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, was this music used as entertainment?
Well, absolutely.
Sure. They didn't, you know, the royalty and the nobles really competed with each other to have the best musicians in their courts and at their service. And
we have to understand that there was no other choice for musical entertainment or
That's
for
right.
entertainment at all. Basically, there were no radios, TVs, whatnot, and you actually had to make your own music or pay someone to make it. It was also, music was a science at that time. Mm-hmm. It was not seen as an extra or frivolous in any way. It was a science that helped describe and explain how the world worked, and it imprints a certain amount of logic over something that's a little ephemeral like sound. It was viewed very differently.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Ron Andrico and Donna Stewart of the Renaissance music and poetry duo Mignarda. And I want to have you perform another piece. This one's called Shall I Strive with Words to Move? You want to tell us a bit about it?
The interesting thing about this piece, to us particularly, is that the tune by John Dowland is a tune called Mignarda, and which means a delicate little thing.
Dowland set these words to this tune in his last book, which was published in 1612, just over 400 years ago. And we actually recorded music from that last book of songs called A Pilgrim's Solace. In fact, it's a good example of what you were just mentioning. There's quite a bit of sacred music woven into the songbook, and some of it is fairly devotional songs, but there's quite a bit of bawdy music in that book as well, including entertainment mask music for a wedding.
Hmm.
And so it's quite an interesting example of what you were just talking about.
Uh-huh. Well, let's have you play Shall I Strive with Words to Move?
Shall I strive with words to move when deeds receive not due regard? Shall I speak and neither please nor be freely heard? Grief, alas, though all in vain, the restless anguish must reveal. She alone, my wound,
perform in front of live audiences all the time and in live events and stuff. How do people react to this? Are they surprised that they like this ancient music?
Exactly, they are. Very often people come to concerts, they don't know why. They came because somebody they know, you know, recommended it or whatever. It's a challenge for us to convince people that they want to hear it. Mm. And once they hear it, they, you know, what is this? How can I get more of this? They come to us in tears after nearly every performance,
having been
moved by this music, which is exactly what it was intended to do, to move the passions. That was the point of this music.
Yeah.
And it's really rewarding. We have sung this music for children. We did a whole day in school thing recently. We sang for preschoolers. We sang for, you know, all the way up through the sixth grade. And there were no behavioral troubles. The teachers were all poised for problems, and the kids just sort of relaxed into this music and swayed in time with it. We sang what we're singing today. We sang Mignon Alone. In fact, we sang some Gregorian chant. It didn't seem to matter.
Why do you think it is? Is it because of the sound of the lute is so soothing? And
that's part of it.
It's gentle music.
The music is, mm-hmm. Yes, it's very gentle music, but it's also music that actually invites the listener in. It requires the listener to engage in the music rather than just to be regaled with it.
We often say we're inviting people into our bubble.
We really feel strongly about this, that music has been turned into a commodity. And I mean, it always has been to an extent. You know, people have always attempted to make a buck with music. But in fact, it's so much that way now that the more subtle music that we favor is sort of, it's so rare now. And it's quite difficult to get people sometimes to let down their defenses and listen closely to it. When they do, they're hooked.
Yeah.
And we feel like it's our job, since we're aware of this, it's our job to actually make that available to people. Because it's so hard to find that moment of repose, that quiet, and that introspective time that enables you to sort of let yourself be taken up by something that has subtlety and nuance.
Yeah, this is not a culture that's conducive to that right now.
No, it certainly isn't. We notice at the very beginning of a concert, people are leaning forward and looking a little anxious because, you know, I can't quite hear that. And their shoulders relax over, you know, the first couple of pieces. And the next thing we know, a couple people are sleeping and a couple, you know, and people just come to us afterwards and say that they've really been moved by this music they'd never heard of.
Yeah. Do you play this music at home all the time? Are you constantly,
pretty much,
you know, working over new material and finding poems that you're turning to music? And
absolutely, absolutely. We don't listen to very much recorded music anymore, and we try not to listen to ourselves. Once you can make your own music, you don't really listen to music the same way. People who actually do it for a living, unless they're just looking for repertory, which is fine too. But, you know, you can imagine that the kind of subtlety that is characteristic of the music that we do, it's such introspective music that once you're hearing it done by somebody else as an external thing on a recording device, for us it's not really something we like to listen to very much. We actually like looking through sheet music and developing our own interpretation.
Mm-hmm. And do you think it really is important for this music to be heard live?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like because poetry is meant to be read out loud. This
exactly.
music is meant to be heard live, right?
Exactly.
I sense that.
Correspond with someone who he probably thinks of us as colleagues, but we think of him as a mentor. Anthony Rulli, who was responsible for discovering a lot of this music in the 1970s and recording a lot of, well, he recorded the entire output of John Dowland with a group in the 1980s, but we correspond with him quite a bit these days, and he talks about the Orphic or the Orphaic experience, or tapping into the mythology of Orpheus, the fact that Orpheus was legendary, he could make trees move with his music, and that sort of experience happens live, and it doesn't necessarily happen via listening to a recording.
Yeah,
he has a philosophy that we connect with the audience and we feed on each other's energy, mm-hmm. which really does happen.
Yeah, live performance should be that.
It should.
Before we run out of time, I do want you to play one more piece. This one's called Sorrow, and it was adapted from a poem by Edna St. Vincent Millay. Tell us a bit.
Well, my musical training, I focused on composition, and I sort of like got sidetracked once I was out of school because I wanted to hear everything before I could describe my own voice, and I got involved in the early music. But I've always been taken by her poetry. She's seemed to have a real knack for bridging the older form and with modern ideas and sort of meeting in the middle somewhere. And her form is always very consistent with the Renaissance sonnet. In fact, the collection that this particular poem was published in, which is in the public domain, Renaissance, was actually written to be set to music. Mm. But I don't think she actually wrote the music herself, or if she did, it's not known to me.
Yeah. Well, let's hear a bit of it. I mean, let's hear the song.
Dress and go to town.
a beauty. I absolutely love poetry.
Isn't that a great poem?
It is. It is.
All my thoughts are slow and brown.
We are almost out of time. Really quickly, tell us what kind of things that you offer. House concerts, weddings. To tell us a little bit, and then we'll want some contact information.
We like to perform house concerts in particular because that enables people to hear the music the way it was meant to be heard.
It's intimate music, and you can hear it close up, and you can be right with us. You can ask questions. But we perform all over.
We perform in all sorts of venues. We performed at the Homer Center for the Arts not very long ago, which was a great experience. We really go out of our way to sort of bridge the gap between early music and more popular styles.
We perform in churches a lot. We do a lot of church concert series.
And I would assume you do Christmas.
Absolutely. We have a whole series of sacred concerts that we do for the Christmas season because we know quite a bit of that music, and we've got a lot of sacred Latin texts that we have.
We didn't say that we met singing the Latin Mass.
But we also, we do things stopping short of jingle bells, you know. And
you won't hear jingle bells from us.
Well, I can see that in a very slow, melodic. Never mind.
Maybe someday.
Give people some contact information so they can get in touch. And you guys have 9 CDs if they want to get copies of CDs.
We have 9 CDs. Miniarda.com is the best place to get in touch with us. MIGNARDA. You can reach Ron's blog that way, which is updated every week with musings on historical music. And you can buy our music. You can listen to our music. It's the best way to get us.
That's great. Well, Ron Andrico and Donna Stewart of Miniarda, thank you so much for joining us. This has been so great to discover this music. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks,
Tish. Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.